Welcome to Agency Highway. This is a podcast for digital agencies and freelancers who want to grow their business, earn more, and work less. Each episode, you'll hear from agency owners that are killing it, meet epic people that can help you along your journey, or just listen to me ramble on about something I think is cool. Head to agencyhighway.com for transcripts, action notes, and to join the community. I'm your host, James Rose. Now, let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by ContentSnare. ContentSnare helps digital agencies get content from their clients on time, in the right format, without email. If you've ever needed to get content from clients, you'll know how painful it can be. You end up constantly chasing them for weeks or months, and by the time it's ready, there's a 900-long email trail full of massive images and a couple of brochures from 6 years ago. ContentSnare makes this a thing of the past by collecting content from your clients in the right format the first time and does all the chasing for you. Try it on your next project by signing up at ContentSnare.com. G'day and welcome back to Agency Highway. Today I've got Adam Hempy on the line, and this is going to be a little bit of a different episode because something like, I'm going to call it an entertainment episode in air quotes that you can't see me doing instead of the standard helpful tips for agencies. And that's because I asked Adam to come on without realizing that he's already been on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how good my memory is. It's really embarrassing, actually, given that it was only about 20 episodes ago that he was on, and I've forgotten already. I'm an idiot. Anyway, thank you, Adam, for joining me.
My pleasure, mate.
But we've decided that we're just going to riff about agency life and have some talk about some horror stories, some horror clients, some of the biggest problems I guess we've had running our agencies. And so stay tuned if you'd like to hear a story about how Adam was almost run over by a client, which is a story that I love.
That was a good one.
Oh yeah. So thanks for joining, Adam. What's the best thing that's happened to you this year?
Best thing that's happened to me this year? I think it would be, although I'm actually about turning on this, but I would say the best thing that's actually happened was moving out of my old apartment that I've been in for 10 years and moving into something that's a little bit more appropriate for this time period in my life. A little bit better. Moved a little bit more upmarket, should we say? But yeah, no, it was a nice move, and that was a good thing that's happened. It's been a long time coming, and something that I've been kind of working towards. So that was a nice moment, for sure.
Nice kicking goals. I remember you talking about that old place you were living in, and it didn't sound amazing.
Not great.
All right. So where should we start? Do you think
agency life? Hey. Yeah. Well, I'll give you a little bit of just to throw a little bit of context out there. So
yeah, your history and like what you used to do, and obviously what you do now. If people don't know who you are already,
yeah, I'll give you the 10-second version. So I'll just go backwards. So currently running Better Proposals, which is online software to help you write better proposals for your clients.
You've definitely never said that before.
No, I know. It's just. No practice at all. Also, I'm well in practice as well because I did a webinar earlier today with Nathan over at
WP Builds. I did the WP Builds.
I always get him his and someone else's thing mixed up. Yeah, no. So I did that earlier today. So yeah, my little catchphrases are rolling. But no, running Better Proposals now. That's been sort of rolling for about 3 years full time now, but then going back, we ran a sort of custom software development company. So we'd go in, ask a million different questions, find all the sort of admin roadblocks, if you like, and bottlenecks, and then we'd build some custom software to handle all that. So it would be sort of CRM stuff, workflow bits, all that kind of jazz. And then going back from that, we ran an agency. In various different sort of shapes and sizes for about 10 years. So it's been an interesting journey, but just started out doing websites, and then just sort of got more and more serious, better rates and all that kind of stuff.
Nice. I believe I read something about how you started Better Proposals because you were spending so long designing up all these nice proposals for that custom web agency. Is that the story?
Yeah. So the this was when we were doing the software stuff. So we kind of had our mind in the software thing. We dabbled in a few bits. Like we'd made little like website builders and stuff. I mean, obviously it wouldn't work now because of the rise of sort of Squarespace and WordPress and all that kind of stuff. But this was way pre all that stuff. And or before it had all sort of taken off. So we basically just we were doing these massive proposals, which were, you know, for 50,000-60,000 pound bits of software. And it really mattered if you got it or didn't get it. Like if you got one of those things, that was a life-changing customer to get or client to get. And if you didn't, it was a, you know, potentially you could have a bit of a problem. So the proposal was a really important point there, and I think some people don't necessarily realize how important that actually is. But we just made the decision very early on, even like way back in the web design world, like let's get good at this, because if you get good at this part, everything else just becomes so much easier. It was a really easy, controllable thing to fix. Being completely autistic, I was like, let's get that sorted out. So we just spent ages doing these proposals, and then you just get like radio silence, you get nothing. I was like, I just want to know what happens if someone opens it. Like if they opened it, looked at the price and closed it, that's cool. At least I know. So I just said to Sabrina, I was like, look, just do whatever. Here's like a rough thing of how I want it to look. I want it to be trackable. So if someone clicks through the pages, I can see what's going on. Yeah. So she makes it. And then it was just evolved it from there. And eventually we spun it off as a sort of a little side business thing. And before long, we were getting more leads and customers through that than we were in the other business. And the transition began.
Yeah, nice. I think that's like the best way, almost the best way to start a business, in a way that you scratch your own itch kind of thing and take it from there. Other people find it valuable.
Well, you know, you've got at least one customer. You know, like it sounds stupid, but like you know that there's at least one person, and from there you can think, well, you know, what conversations have I had, do I know other people that have had sort of similar issues and that kind of stuff, and you can kind of just sort of follow it and just work out roughly how common that actually is. And you know, the proposal and quoting thing was absolutely massive, but it's weird, the whole digital signature thing has been an absolute, you know, sort of where that my mad story comes in, but like it's been a massive theme all the way through. I'll throw a random one at you. The first example of me learning that signatures were really quite important was when I got drunk one night and went out, walked home, walked past this shop called the Spanish Property Shop. I thought, oh, that's cool. I must have been 20. I can't have even been 21. So I wrote the number down. I thought I'd be cool to own a place in Spain. So I wrote the number down. Went home the following day, and I'm sure many people have done similar things, but I actually, for some reason, picked the phone up and called them the following morning. I don't know why. So I called this person up. I meet this guy called Graham, and Graham puts me in touch with this dude in Estonia. He's like, you can't afford anywhere in Spain. You don't own nothing. What are you doing? Like, maybe you could buy a car park in Estonia. I'm like, oh, I don't know. A car park, that's not useful to me at all. And he's like, no, you can buy like forests and like little huts and stuff, it's great. Like, okay, so I go and fly to Estonia, and at the age of 20, with a credit card of a $6,000 credit balance on it, and I basically, to cut a long story short, I bought a plot of land in Estonia, and
God, I love this story.
And then this was the method that they decided we were all going to go out to celebrate. So I told them earlier in the day I was going to do it. And then they're like, yeah. We go to a strip club. So we go to the strip club. And I basically signed the contract on the stripper, physically put the contract on her and signed it. It was all like, it was like a ritual. It's like what they do. I was just this 20-year-old kid, like no idea what I'm doing. And they just thought this was just brilliant and really, really funny. And this is obviously what they did. So that was that. And then the serious part comes in, where I've sent them £6,000 and never actually bothered to take that contract, or at least my part of it, with me. So months later, I'm like, oh yeah, I probably need that piece of paper that says that I own that land, and never did anything with it. So Not exactly a client story.
Wow. But wait, so you didn't actually ever get that document back?
No.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, but brilliant lesson.
Yeah, the signatures are like important.
Yeah. But contracts are important. Keep your stuff together, you know, because without contracts, you've got nothing.
Oh, absolutely. It
probably wouldn't have mattered anyway, but...
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people are quite blasé about contracts. I think, you know, there's most, I would say, I would hope that most people listening to this are, you know, have got contracts and proposals sorted. But the amount of times I see questions coming up in Facebook groups or whatever where people say stuff like, hey, so I've got this client and I've given them their website, they aren't paying me. How should I turn their access off to the website, or like what should I do now? And people will be like, oh, did you have a contract? And I'll be like, no. It's just kind of insane that how often I see something like that, or, you know, they're asking what their options are now and there's no contract in place. And without that contract, you have probably zero options really. Maybe some email, if the email trail can back you up, then you might have something, but I honestly it could be difficult. So it's definitely something we all need to have sorted.
I mean, yeah, it is, and I know, like, you know, different parts of the world sort of do the legal system differently and things, but I mean, very few people have actually been, I mean, maybe probably American audience have probably done this a little bit more because it's what they do over there, but Most people, I don't think, have been through any kind of court proceedings in terms of like trying to get money back off people. But it's a really, really, really interesting process. And we went through it actually. But basically what happened was, I mean, standard stuff. Somebody had missed a payment. They owed us, I think, £3,000 or £4,000, nothing major, but enough to take him to court over. But the guy was a barrister, a seasoned veteran barrister. Yep. And
the perfect kind of adversary you want in court, basically.
Exactly what you want in court. Yeah. So like there's me, like, no, I can't even talk. I'm that nervous. We've been preparing for this thing for months because he's dragged it out.
So self-represented.
Yeah, because it was small claims court. You could only self-represent. You couldn't have anyone else do it for you.
Right.
You can have what's called a McKenzie friend. And I didn't really know what this was, but basically this is like an advisor that can come into the courtroom with you and kind of basically help, for want of a better term, help you keep your shit together while you're like basically melting in front of this judge. The judge was super cool, but we must have had, I don't know, 150 pages of email correspondence and little agreements and this and that. It's absolutely a nightmare. So this guy,
an actual contract at the time?
Oh yeah, yeah. So we had a contract originally, and then the whole thing was very, very difficult, and he was being really quite tricky. So I tried to nail everything down. I'm like, look, tell me everything that's wrong that you're not happy with. We will then give you a time frame, and we will write a great big list out. And we will guarantee that that stuff is fixed within a certain time frame, which we did. Mm-hmm. So we had the main contract that we started with, and then like the small little tied up bit to kind of like wrap it up and finish it off. Mm-hmm. We called it a snagging list back in the day. It's a really, really good method of like wrapping up jobs if you've got sort of that scope creep thing going on. It's a quite a good little method of doing it. So we had that. So we had those two things. And along with that, we had like, God knows how many millions of emails between the two of us, but I didn't know where any of this stuff was. So this is what this guy did, is he knew the case. He knew what I needed at the time. So he would sit over the folder and flip it open and point me to the right bits. I'd then try and talk, which wasn't very good.
Oh, this is your McKenzie friend was doing this.
This is my McKenzie friend who can't talk. He's not allowed to say anything.
Wow, that is so strange.
He can only point to me. Yeah, it's really strange. But he can whisper to me, but he can't talk to the judge.
Right.
Really quite odd. But the judge, the room was like massive. So there could have been like 200 people in this room, like big jury benches and everything else. But it's just like me and this guy and then him and that's it. And the judge. Really, really odd setting. But yeah, so we actually went through all of this. And the guy had no point. He just simply hadn't paid his bill and decided he didn't want it anymore after he'd signed for it. So it was an open and shut case. I just got scared because I thought, you know, well, what if he wins? Yeah. And he was counter-suing us. He was counter-suing us for a refund of everything he paid us already.
Oh, my
God. So I was like, oh, well, if we lose, I've got to give him back, like, you know, 14 grand or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So it was like a lot riding on it, even though it was quite an open and shut case. But anyway, we won, right? So this judge is like, oh, yeah, like, you know, you can have this, you can have travel expenses, you're just basically giving everything to us. And so we come outside, obviously, like, super, like, ecstatic, basically, like, finally, we've won this thing, it's finally put to bed. And this guy goes up to the dude's car, who's basically just parked. He's such an arrogant dick, but he's parked on the pavement. And then gone into court to do this thing, right? So he goes up to the guy's car and takes a picture of the front of his number plate.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't wind him up for God's sake. And he's just lost to a kid. Like, his entire identity is he's a badass in court and he's just lost to a child, basically, in court. This is just like, this is the worst day ever. And you're winding him up by taking pictures of the front of his car. So he starts the engine up and basically full tilt drives towards me and I won't name him, but like the guy, our Mackenzie friend, right?
Yeah.
Just having steaming towards him, like proper Indiana Jones, like jam, you know, pulling him out of the way. I'm like, he was going to hit us. This is insane.
Wow.
Absolutely mad. Yeah. It's So get your contract signed, everyone.
Yeah. So did anything actually come of that? Like, did you like try and hit him up for trying to run you over?
We actually went straight into the police station because it was right next to the court. It was actually like on the same buildings. We went straight in and we were standing there and he saw us go in and then he called me and he's like, oh, ha ha ha. Like, well done. You won. I'm like, yeah, cool, mate. Like, right. I don't know what to say.
Did you report him?
No, we didn't in the end. No. We didn't in the end. It was such a strange day. It was an incredibly strange day, like really emotional day.
And sounds like a some kind of mental case, you know, like it's really
strange. Yeah, I mean, he was not a nice guy. He said some awful stuff to Sabrina, who was obviously working her ass off to try and finish his stuff for him.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple of other friends who were like, knew the guy as well. He was super, super, super horrible to all the women there. And there's obviously quite a theme there. So didn't like that very much.
I feel like this is another story you should go on Clients from Hell podcast and tell.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's I think it's not necessarily just about clients because I've been on there talking about content snare because it's obviously a pretty
protective stuff,
talking about clients that take forever to send you content. But yeah, I think it's like a whole website. Like that's what it's one of those like FML type websites where people tell small stories about something.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's like perfect place for it. I was keen to hear though on that the actual ruling from the judge. Did you actually end up seeing the money?
Yeah. He paid it super quick.
Yeah, wow, okay.
He literally sent it like the following day. Full amount to the penny, absolutely perfect.
Wow.
Because if he hadn't have paid it, he would have got a county court judgment and he would have been disbarred.
So he's got a lot on the line at that point.
Yeah.
I always wonder with those kind of court rulings, whether how often people just dig their heels in and not actually pay.
Oh, he could have done. He could have dragged that out for years.
Yeah, and so I imagine like some people, especially if it's going to put them near bankrupt or something. Like I hear about these like suing cases where there's like huge amounts of money on the line. I'm like, how does this even happen? Does the money ever even change hands? But yeah,
it was a unique case, and if he hadn't have been a barrister that stood to lose a lot, he would have been in trouble. So that's why he had to pay it super quick. But look, I mean, lessons are there. You know, get your stuff signed. I mean, if we hadn't been as diligent as we were, and we weren't over the top, do you know what I mean? We weren't like getting him to agree and confirm everything on email, but major things, get an email. It helps. So when the guy's turning around saying, oh yeah, you never said this. I'm like, well, actually, you know, without being like all Harvey Specter on you, like on the 3rd of January, you did send me an email saying this information. So that's why it's like that. So
And if I don't know what. Sorry,
go on. That's right.
don't know what it's like in the UK. I assume it accounts. But so my lawyer actually emails me sometimes to say, like, if you respond with such and such in your email, then we will go ahead with this change or whatever, you know. So obviously, emails have some kind of bearing in Australia. You know, I'm bordering on legal advice here, and I don't want to make it very clear that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just saying that that's what my lawyer does. So obviously, email is quite important as well.
Look, it helps. I mean, if all I would say is most, I mean, at least in our experience, and again, like, same disclaimer, not legal advice. Like, it's just sort of, what do they say? It's for entertainment purposes only. Hey, we did do that disclaimer at the beginning, didn't we? So, but yeah, look, get yourself covered. It's, you don't have to go mad with it. But like, if you've got a contract at the beginning and you've, you know, you've got all your basics, your standard terms and conditions to, you know, your standard business terms and conditions, and then you've got the, you know, what you're going to do part in your proposal, and then you've got a couple of emails that go with it, man, that's gold. Like, you've got the whole story there. Yeah. You've got what you originally agreed. You've got any changes along the line. You've got, you know, personality in there.
And actually saying in your contract that, you know, changes are billed at whatever rate. So that you're covered to say, you know, that they've requested these changes. So therefore, that's what this next bill is all about. And I mean, to some extent, you might want to even create a proposal or contract for major changes as well, right? Like, we've done that several times, of course, using Better Proposals to have those changes outlined in a table, those associated costs.
Yeah, it's a great idea. If projects are running away from you, it's a great idea just to sort of, you know, just draw a line in the sand and say, all right, look, things are getting a bit messy. Let's reestablish, you know, a baseline here, and let's reagree what is left. And it's like, it's an agreement within an agreement, in the sense that, you know, it's a standalone thing, but it ties everything up, and it allows you to sort of finish off the project. And that's what I love so much about content scenarios, because it starts the process exactly, it starts the project exactly where, it starts the whole process off correctly. It just does. And when you're saying to them, like, look, this is the system for submitting the content and all that kind of stuff, it starts it off the right way. So they get in the process of it.
And we've had comments like that, or sorry, clients like that, back when we were doing web design, where they'd try to change the content on us after it's all been submitted and approved. And at some point, you just have to say, look, no. Because it's kind of hard, because you might be like, oh, look, it's two words. Like, I can change a couple of things, you know, here and there. And then they'll come back and say, actually, can we change this as well? Actually, can we change this as well? Actually, and you, next thing, you're 10 emails later, which has had a day in between each email. So it's like nearly 2 weeks has gone by and you haven't got this freaking job finished. So we always used to say, look, in this was in the contract, is that you got two rounds of revisions. So put everything together in one big list, in one email, and we will make those changes, and then we do it one more time, and that's it. Anything outside of that, charged.
And if you want to put two words in one round of changes, that's fine.
Yeah,
but that's still a round. So you can put 50 things in it, or you can put one. It's up to you.
Yeah, and that's the thing we did with Content Snare, and one of the considerations when we built it was that it would, once their content is approved, the client can't come back in and change it. And you have that single source of truth that you can use to put your content. You know, it doesn't even necessarily have to be content. People use Content Snare for all kinds of information, you know, get it, like, as I was telling you offline earlier, there's we've had some interest from mortgage brokers as well to get, you know, documents and stuff from clients. And the idea is it's locked in, and then it can't be changed after that. So
It's genius, actually. I mean, I went through the whole mortgage process a couple of years back, and it's that's all it is. It's just information gathering. The amount of times the guy was like, oh, can you give me this? Can you give me that? Can you give me a letter for this? Can you give me a letter for that? Can you scan this document?
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfect for that. It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And so many of them have terrible processes. It's just like, do it all in one go, save it as a template, and send it to everybody. Like,
but this whole idea of being organized, you know, from having a good proposal to having the content gathering process being sorted out, what does it say about you if you don't have this stuff sorted? You know, it's not a good look. Conversely, if you do have this stuff sorted out, it's amazing how many problems just get nipped in the bud. I mean, there's so many little things like, you know, this is such a ridiculous client story, but like, this is super, super, super like way back in the day. Like before I really had any kind of belief in myself as well. And that's what some of this stuff really comes down to. It's like, oh, I don't want to put anyone out. I don't want to, you know, yeah. And it was, I can't remember what these guys did. It was like steel fabrication for like gates and stuff, like iron gates and that. So it was like a factory that had this sort of like converted office thing upstairs, and it wasn't finished. It was like this weird little, I don't know, like really bad staircase. And then when I got up the top, they had just had the joists on the what would be like the landing, right? But then the office was fine. So you go into the office and it's all good. But out on the landing, there was like no floor. And it was just like a 20-foot drop. So, yeah, so I go in, like, bang on time. I would always wait outside in the car and then literally go in with like 30 seconds to spare. So it was just bang on time. Always did that. So it wasn't like I rolled up like 10 minutes earlier or anything. So I go up there and knock on the door. I was like, oh, you know, it's Adam from, what did I call myself back then? Adam M. Designs. rubbish. And then he's like, oh, I'm just with someone. Can you just wait outside a second? I was like, yeah, no worries. So instead of going, well, it's 4 o'clock. It's exactly the time you said, like, okay, cool, or whatever. Like actually standing up for myself. I'm like, yeah, cool. So I went outside his door. And I didn't want to like go back downstairs again or anything. So I just stood there balanced on this beam for 45 minutes. 45 minutes. I stood there like a freaking ballerina, like doing the beam thing that the girls do in the gymnastics or whatever. Like I was just walking backwards and forwards on this beam, like 20 foot above it. But these guys like welding gates together, just looking at me going, what is this idiot doing? He's turned up in a suit and tie. Looks ridiculous. He's walking like, you know, up and down this like beam, absolutely mad. You know, the guy comes out. He's like, "Oh, sorry to keep you waiting." I'm like, "Yeah, that's all right, mate. No worries. Don't worry. I was keeping myself well amused, wrestling with death." But like, have some respect for yourself, man. Like, I'm talking to myself here, but like, just go in and be like, "Mate, this is ridiculous. What you're doing?" Like, it's important to have that. You know, even though it might lose you the job, perhaps, because that would be quite rude to do that. It's also incredibly rude to leave somebody standing outside your office for 40 minutes.
It's probably the client you don't want either.
Perfect. Exactly. So like I should have just said something, but sometimes we all like, I don't want to like put anyone out. I don't want to make anyone else feel weird. It's like, well, what about not making yourself feel?
I love like how that. You've tied that into proposals and stuff, because I wonder if how many people actually think like that, where it's they don't want to ask for like a formal confirmation to go ahead with work, or you know, need specific wording in emails. Like we've actually asked for specific wording in emails for sign-offs and that sort of stuff. You know, to say that the job's complete and they're happy to have it handed over. And, you know, I always try to frame that by being like, look, just to make sure we've got our, you know, T's crossed and our I's dotted or whatever, maybe our eyes crossed and T's dotted. If you,
I like that one. Yeah. Slip over.
You know, just to have something to fall back on you know, and I have literally actually said to clients before, like, this is, yeah, this is just an ass covering thing, as a joke. And if they know, if this kind of part of your personality, then I'm sure it'll fly. It's like, you can't not cover yourself just because you don't want to put other people out.
Yeah, because the consequences are that if we hadn't done that with our barrister friend, that whole conversation would have been a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
Way more difficult. Because we wouldn't have had that evidence of going, look, we tried.
Yeah.
We did try, you know. And well, my brother runs a video production company, right? It's kind of different from the whole sort of digital media thing, but the end result's kind of the same. He has this problem all the time. He exports a video, which if anyone has done video editing knows that the editing process is longer than like, I don't know, just take something simple like changing a name, right? Which is probably the most common thing. Somebody's giving him a spelling of a name for like a testimonial video that's been shot, like, you know, Sarah or whatever. And he's written it how they've told him to write it. And he's gone through this whole process of exporting the video. It can take 2-3 hours, maybe overnight, upload it to YouTube, send it to them, whatever. This is not a quick, like, change two words, press save and upload. This is a whole process, half a day sometimes.
Yep.
And there's no provision in there a lot of the time for video production guys where they're actually getting paid for that when it's not even their fault. It's someone else's fault because they spelled somebody's name wrong. So what a lot of video production companies are now starting to do, and I totally got the idea from my little bro, is yes, they send one proposal to win the job and then they send another one as like a sign-off sheet.
Sign-off, yeah.
It's like, but obviously, because you know this, but you can embed video into the proposals. So he's just like, well, this looks like scrappy or whatever, but he's just like, look, there's the video, press play. If you're happy with it, sign it.
Yep.
And he's just written his own little thing, just saying any changes charge at minimum of 50 quid.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Keep your prices up. But,
it is. Yeah. People definitely don't realize how long stuff takes too. That's part of it. So there can be some education there too. Like we used to have people that would want when we're doing app development, or we kind of still are, but like, a mobile app, for example, it takes about 2 hours to get set up on the Android store, right, and submit the thing. But it takes like days to go through the review process and whatever and get an app up on the apps, the Apple store, right? It's an absolute joke, some of the things you have to go through for Apple. And, and people are like, oh, I thought I'd be able to get an app for $3,000. I'm like, it's literally $3,000 for the amount of time that goes into just putting it on the app store. Like, if you want just Android, sure.
Yeah. Never mind actually having anything to put there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, the people just don't realize how long stuff takes sometimes. But, and again, they're probably not your ideal clients if they won't come around on it.
Yeah, it's... I think that's it. There's so much to this whole game. And I don't know, I mean, we did the whole agency thing for like 8 years, but we did it super, super, super chill. Like we weren't in any rush. We weren't in any rush. I mean, to us,
any rush to grow or?
Yeah, to grow. I mean, it was weird. Like we had this kind of idea that, you know, one day we'd have this big sort of office and loads of staff and everything else. But I think in the back of like mine and Sabrina's minds, we were like, no, I don't really care if that ever actually happens or not. We just love the process of actually, you know, working with this stuff, getting excited about new jobs and whatever. But you can't let that get in the way of your business basics. And your business basics are not taught usually. You know, everybody loves to teach the marketing side of things or, you know, the getting clients side of things, but no one ever really wants to teach the very business basics, which are make sure that you've got your ass covered. It doesn't mean like you need to go and like hire lawyers and all that kind of stuff. Obviously might in some cases, but it just really means like you say, just cover your ass. Just make sure that you aren't going to be running around doing free work on the back of somebody else's mistakes or somebody else's lack of knowledge or lack of education or not knowing what they want or whatever. And you can mitigate that by doing good discovery. You can mitigate it by being very clear. You can do all those kinds of things, but at some point you have to just make sure that you've got your basics covered and you have a process of making sure that you're doing the work that you're being paid to do, not run around just, you know, fixing other stuff just because you haven't got a process for charging for it, because you feel bad, you know.
Yeah, and I think it can help to get some kind of legal advice, at least to help out on contracts.
You only need to do it once, man. Like, you only need to do it once.
And I know, like, I've been in that position too when I was first starting business, that I thought I could just go and get something that was already done and, you know, try and modify it to my business, which is obviously pretty risky. I don't know. Like, I've never had – I don't know anyone that's had to go to court with one of their homemade –
we did
contracts. Hey,
we did. Ours was fine.
Yeah,
ours was fine. But Sabrina and I
might have been good. You know, someone else might have done one that's not good. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if anyone actually wants to see what we used in court, I'm not saying like, oh, this is the one thing you should use. But if you go to betterproposals.io, click on templates, proposals, and then go and find the software development proposal template. The contract in there, in the terms and conditions bit, that's literally a derivative of what we used. So, I mean, it's
the show notes.
Yeah, I'll send it to you, and you can chuck it in. But yeah, it's there. So, like, I don't know. We've just got this weird, like, I say it's not weird. It's just we've got this vibe of just give away all the stuff that we've kind of learned, because it's not easy. It's not easy. So if something I've learned or picked up is something that can help somebody else or shave some time off, you know, learning something or a lesson or whatever, amazing. You know, it's
nice. So you have a series of templates that are actually built properly, right? Yeah. Not, this isn't like, so what I was referring to and maybe having some advice is when like people literally Google like a template, and you know, if they stumble on yours, they're probably going to be.
Well, they're lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
They're simply lucky, but there's also an awful lot of rubbish out there.
So much crap. And this is a long time before, you know, I was finding these probably before you guys even existed. And some of the crap that I was trying to knock together from other proposals, like in hindsight, that was probably quite dangerous. But yeah, like actually one random little thing I wanted to bring up when we were talking about proposals and holding up in court, a friend of mine actually likes to have for website development, this might be helpful for some agencies listening, but they have a clause in there that says it's 50% payment up front, and second 50% is paid when the website is signed off or after 12 weeks, whichever happens first. And
that's quite good.
Yeah, it's really cool because that way any delays that happen, it's pretty much... like, especially if they're on the client, then they still get paid. So that's, and they've actually had to take that to court and won. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. And I was very impressed with that. So that might be something worth looking into.
There's another one that's quite good, actually. And I don't know where I heard of this, but break up the project a little bit more logically. So 50% and 50% puts you in a really bad negotiating position at the end of a project.
Mm.
So that 12-week thing is quite good because it gets you out of it. But if you've literally got to a point where there's a dispute and they're like, no, the project isn't finished, we're not happy with it, we're not going to pay. No one's going to pay when they're not happy with something. So if that does happen, and look, let's be real, it does. It does happen. Happened to us, happens to everyone. Yeah. You do end up with projects where it's all gone a bit wrong, and no matter which way you spin it, they're not happy and they don't want to pay. But if you break the payment up much better, so like you find yourself at the end of it. So say the project's $10,000, right? So you've got your $5,000 deposit. That was easy. They're excited. Now you're at the end of the project, and now you've got so many tiny little things like words, snags, font sizes, shades of color, all hanging on $5,000.
Yeah.
Right. So what changes, tiny little changes? It's just an hour. It's just a little change. How many of those are you prepared to do for £5,000 or $5,000, whatever?
Yeah.
Like you will do anything because it's easy money at that point.
Yeah.
But actually, if you change the way that you invoice it and you say it's 50% upfront, no one's ever got a problem with that. And then it's 30% when you've signed the design off. That means you're ending up with, what, my maths has just gone terrible because it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
No.
What's that, 70%, 80%?
Yeah.
Whatever. So, like, you know, you've now at this point, most of it's paid.
Yeah.
Most of it's paid. Or you can even say 40% and then just say the last 10% we do on snagging.
Yeah.
So you break the project up. So at this stage, what you can actually do is use that last 10% as negotiating if they're being a pain in the ass with the snagging.
Yeah.
So if they're being like, oh, we want this change, we want that change, we want whatever, you can go, look, do you know what? Like, we've done what we said we were going to do, but because we want this relationship to continue, blah, 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 let's just meet in the middle. You owe us $1,000 for the last 10%. Let's go halves and it's finished. The project's finished.
Mm.
And it's a really easy way of then just using that. And now you've obviously already been paid. So it's just little tricks like that are quite useful, especially when you end up with some of these difficult clients.
I like that. Yeah. And I think, I mean, we tended to do that with bigger projects and have like a three-part split where it was probably not 10% remaining at the end, but usually like 20 or 30. Depending on the project size. But yeah, that's makes a lot less risk on you. 50% risk is quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's a really odd negotiating position right at the very end. And it doesn't put you in a good position as the maker. And it puts all of the power on them.
You made a really good point with the the make wanting to do more changes. Like you'll probably justify it yourself to do more and more little changes at the end because you've got more money riding on it. And like, I've never thought about it like that. And we've definitely done that. Like I've been in that position before. And I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. You just nailed it.
Yeah. And it's so funny because when you actually put it down to it, it's a tiny little snag list. You're looking at the list going, it's like 9 things on there. It's like 2 hours. So if I do that in 2 hours, $5,000's turning up this afternoon.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really easy thing to negotiate, like any like negotiate with yourself or justify. Like it's an easy justification, but it's a funny one, man. But like, I think all of this stuff is, it's like, it's all part of the, you know, without getting sort of like too like woo woo with it, but like, it's all part of the journey. And there is really no point where you've made it as an agency owner, really. You might have a celebration moment, you might have a champagne moment, you might win a big client, you might win a big like corporate client or whatever, but there's no like end result. You know, with a like the type of businesses that we've run, like Content Scenario and Better Proposals, like you might sell the company one day and that's like a defining end moment.
Yeah. Well, that's about it. Because other than that, it never ends either, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. You just constantly, it's like having a massive house. You just constantly redecorating the thing. And by the time you've gone around and done it all, the thing that you did first is terrible now. It's the worst thing in the house. So you just keep going and going and going. My parents have been doing it for like 30 years. They've never stopped, ever. Wow. It's hilarious. It's never, because you can't, right? And, you know, it's just important to realize sometimes that it's all just, like it's just a journey. It's just a thing that you just go through, and it's always an iteration. So you just make those tiny little improvements, tiny little changes. You know, maybe all you picked up from this, listening to this, is like, you know, maybe shuffling your payment terms around or getting a contract signed or just deciding like, no, I'm going to stand out for myself a little bit or whatever, but embrace the struggles and the tricky times because they're what make you, you know. But years and years and years ago, I remember at one point, like my electricity was like cut off and everything else. And it had like this little key card meter thing. It's like the lowest point ever. Mm-hmm. But like you had these little key card meter things. You had to take them to like the little trashy like corner shop and you had to give them like cash. And then they would charge up, if you like, the key, right? The plastic key. And then you take the key and you put it in your meter and then your lights would come back on, right? Yeah. And the minimum you could put on was £5. And I had like, I dug out the sofas and everything else. And I had this update and this change to make for this client. And the electricity's gone. And I've used up the emergency. So I've got nothing. Mm-hmm. And I've got no money. This is the lowest point. I've got no money. There's nothing in the accounts. Everything's overdrawn. I've zero cash. And I'm not talking to my parents because I've decided to be proud and I'm going to be independent. So I'm like, okay, I am well out of options here. So I walked in the pissing rain in the middle of January with no coat for like 2 hours because I had £4.85 and the woman wouldn't like do it with 15p left. So I had to walk up and down the street trying to find 15p in the road. And honestly, I look back at that like to make the fiver up, right? To go and do it. And but honestly, I've never, like, if I think about the happy moments that I've had, like, you know, with Better Proposals or with you know, winning that court case, it was obviously like quite cool, but nothing even comes close to hitting update and publish on that little change.
Wow.
Nothing comes close. It was
because of the journey and the amount of effort that went in, do you think?
Yeah. It was such a trivial little change as well. And it was just like a really cool moment because it's like, no, I did this. Like, I got myself in this trouble. I quit my job when I shouldn't have done or whatever. And I've got myself in this mess and I'm starting to get myself out of it. And I'm doing it now. Like, this is the moment where I'm starting to get myself out of it. And I don't know, it's not for everyone. You know, some people like having things being comfortable, but you know, I look back on stuff like that and think, actually, it's those little struggles that help you get through a tough time, you know, like clients being problematic all of a sudden isn't such an issue really. It's a journey and it's just like, just each bit is just chip it away, improve and enjoy it.
Well, that was,
and remember you're an artist, you know, like do the thing that you actually love doing.
Bloody hell. This is, this is great. This is absolutely amazing. Like, this is good. This got like deeper than I expected it to, and I love it. I feel like an asshole because I never say anything that like encouraging to people.
My brain started going a little bit funny because it's 10 past one in the morning.
Yeah, you're so crazy. I don't know why. Like, you should have just said, look, we need to line up some better times.
Well, better times would have been like worse for you and whatever. So like, someone's got to.
Yeah, it would have just been a bit like a little night
time. Yeah, in the middle, maybe.
anyway.
I've really enjoyed it, man. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. It's been amazing. So before we wrap up, what's your favorite piece of technology right now?
Favorite piece of technology? Oh, it's a tricky one, man. It's a tricky one. I'm actually going through a little bit of a phase of like trying not to use technology for stuff.
That's a pretty good answer right there.
Well, I got for my birthday a notebook, and it's totally not technology, and I'm absolutely dodging the answer. But I'm going to say my notebook and a pen, because if I look through that notebook, I can see some really cool sketches of stuff from ages ago, and those little sketches are now features in our product. And I forget about them, and then I look back through it. So I would say a notebook, because I don't have any of those sketches on anything electronic, and I can't do it like that. So I would say
nice
pen and paper.
That's awesome. Very good. And sometimes I get back to pen and paper as well. Like, I just bust out a book next to my desk and start drawing up like user flows when they first sign up to Snare or whatever. And sometimes it's nicer than trying to do it on some mock-up tool or whatever.
It's more raw. It's like more connected to like, I feel like the idea and the manifestation of that idea, if that's a deep word, but like that seeing that idea come to life is closer. Like, the distance between the idea in your head and seeing it happen, it's more live. It's more, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe absolutely. I also think it's healthy to try and get off technology a bit more. I feel like I've been hearing this come up so many times lately. Like, James Schremko talks about it on his podcast where, you know, one of his like metrics just about now is like how little he can use his phone. You know, like, he tries to get out of the house, you know, if he's going down to the shops or whatever, or he just won't take his phone, you know, then trying to get away from that constant reliance on tech. And I kind of dig that because, you know, I'm pretty bad at always needing to check something or be on my phone. So yeah, I'm loving that.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm always trying to just find the little moments, like, oh, okay, I'm going for coffee. You know, I'm in Croatia at the moment, so like, there's little coffee shops everywhere. Like, okay, cool, I'm going to go for coffee. Do I need my phone though? Do I really need it for like the 25 minutes and maybe going to be out of the house? Exactly. Is it like really that life and death? Like, could I maybe leave it at home? And then when you do, it's really interesting. Like, all sorts of stuff happens. Like, you talk to people that you wouldn't have spoken to, or you see something you haven't seen or whatever. You're just so much more aware of actually what's happening. And then I think we all know this and we do it. And then, you know, it's awesome. But it's one of those little things. We all need to do it more.
Absolutely. Wow. I think we can wrap it up there. Where can people go to find out more about you? Actually, one I will mention is, if you want to hear Adam's interview where we actually talk about the ins and outs of writing amazing proposals, that is episode 4 of Agency Highway. So that's at agencyhighway.com/4, the number 4. Anywhere else, Adam?
Pretty much everything goes through our company website, really. So betterproposals.io. Plus whatever link, if you've got your affiliate thing somewhere, so everyone can buy you a beer.
Sure.
They never buy anything from us. But yeah, I mean, that's everything's through there. So if you want to get in contact with us or anything like that, that's the place to do it.
Very good. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Adam Hempy, and that was an awesome chat. So thank you for joining me, Adam.
My pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review, or share it with someone you think will get something out of it. I'll see you in the next episode. Discover how to grow your agency, earn more, and work less at agencyhighway.com. Head over there to get resources from this episode and full transcripts. See you next time. This episode was brought to you by Content Snare.
If you're a digital agency or just need to get content or info from your clients, ContentSnare can help you collect it on time and without enormous email trails. Give it a try at ContentSnare.com.